For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. Now, between making socially distanced merriment at Christmas time, to planning for such, to consuming all of the crazy news coming out of Washington and Nashville over the past week, you've probably already forgotten about the solar winds hack revealed earlier this month. Here to tell you why you shouldn't forget about why this cyber assault on the federal government and some of our biggest companies is a big deal for you and me is cybersecurity expert Tim Weber of Farmington-based AdNet Technologies. Tim, could you briefly give us a simplified synopsis of what happened and why the average Joe or Jane should care?
You know, what we saw with this was a very, very sophisticated attack by a somewhat unknown group at this point that took advantage of a software company that provides services to organizations all over the world as a very, very targeted attack, actually implanted some malicious software within their legitimate software stack. So when organizations downloaded what they thought were proper updates for that software, actually were creating backdoors to allow these attackers to get into these organizations. You know, what we saw with this was, as I mentioned before, it was incredibly targeted. You know, went after very specific businesses, a lot of government agencies, and, you know, went on for a period of a number of months, unfortunately, before it was discovered.
You know, and so there you go. I mean, you really hit at the truly diabolical, or depending on which side of the street you're coming from, brilliant aspect of this attack was that the hackers managed to attach their malicious software to software updates that SolarWinds sends out to its 33,000 customers. The company says over half of its customers did indeed download those updates. All of us regularly work with computers, and we know that we're constantly being asked to update our software. Can we ever trust those updates again?
You know, the challenge becomes is there's a risk with doing things, but there's also a risk with not doing things. And my advice to people is always, you should always do these updates. You know, there are reasons to be concerned about it, but there's never been more attention on these updates than there are right now. And personally, I actually have a lot of trust in these organizations, you know, based off of the things that they've put into place as a result of this.
Is there any way to do these up to be more judicious with doing these updates, or do you just have to trust that this wasn't your time and that the hackers just didn't get to you this time?
The nature of it is while it's a very sophisticated attack, most of us are hopefully not ever going to be the targets of, you know, a nation state attacker group, which is believed to have potentially pulled this off. Doing updates is an absolutely critical part of any type of regular security program. And, you know, you should always be looking to do updates, ideally on at least a monthly basis for all of your systems.
So you just said it. Most of us are too, as President Trump would put it, small potatoes to ever be targeted by an organization like this. So that brings us back to the original question. Why should your average Joe or Jane care about this story?
I think that there's certainly some national security implications, you know, in particular about this. You know, when you look at the list of federal agencies, Department of Homeland Security, the National Nuclear Security Agency, the Treasury, what we don't know is what are the second and third order effects of this? You know, I've seen no public list at this point yet of what businesses or other organizations that have been targeted. So, you know, it's important to note with this that these attacks weren't necessarily destructive. The group that went in and took advantage of these vulnerabilities, they were going to get information. Now, the next question becomes is, what do they do with that information? And that's the $64,000 question at this point. None of us know, or if it's known, it, you know, hasn't been publicized yet. So
I love it. You know, the kids have no idea what we're talking about when we talk about the $64,000 question. They just think, the kids are like, why did they pick 64? Why not 54? Why not 84?
And sorry.
Old folks like us know exactly what you're talking about. For those who don't know, it was a game show way back in the day. Anywho, the hackers reportedly were inside of SolarWinds for 9 months undetected. What is the lesson there for the rest of us?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And part of the challenge is that, you know, all of the forensics have not been completed yet. So one of the big questions is how did these attackers first get into SolarWinds? So, you know, in the absence of very specific information regarding this threat, it's all of the basics that we talk about, which is make sure you have good passwords in place. You know, don't reuse your passwords. You know, you'd be amazed at how many attacks take place because somebody used the same password on system A, system B, and system C. System C gets breached. Now the attackers can use those passwords on A and B. Use multi-factor authentication whenever and wherever possible. So that's where when you're logging in, you're not only putting in a password, but you're getting a code texted to your cell phone or some type of application going off. You know, you do those things along with watching out for the emails that you get, having good firewalls in place, doing the regular updates on the machines. Because again, one of my concerns with this is people are going to use this as a reason to not do updates. You're much, much more likely to have some type of cybersecurity event happen by not having your Windows or your Apple operating system updated than you are by somebody taking advantage of a what's called a supply chain attack here and sending you a compromised update of some sort. Another thing that we recommend to organizations is you should regularly train and test your users. You know, make them aware of what are these scams, what are the types of emails they'll see, and then send them out. There's programs that you can do that will allow you to send a what's called a fake phishing email. You know, so nothing bad will happen if the person clicks on it. It just reports back to a training system and allows us to do further education, you know, and coaching for individuals. Because again, you know, if you're like me, you know, you're probably getting 150, 200 emails a day. Some of these emails are incredibly deceptive, that they look legitimate. You know, some are laughable, you know, that you can tell that they're not real. But, you know, there's a lot of science, there's a lot of social engineering, a lot of psychology that go into these. So it's not surprising that people still fall for them. And the fact that we still see them indicates that people still fall for them because, you know, these criminals, which are really what they are, won't do this anymore if once these things are no longer effective.
But I do well to keep the most sensitive transactions that I do, my banking, my taxes on one computer, and then other types of transactions on another. Would that be advisable?
Yeah, I mean, if you do have an ability to use separate machines for separate functions, I mean, there are certain things that we all do that are higher risk. You know, in the two biggest ones are opening and reading emails and responding to emails and just doing general internet browsing. If you have the ability to do different machines, I can tell you that there are, you know, being in a cybersecurity person, I do have a number of machines. I'm looking at, you know, six screens in front of me right now at home. There are things that I will only do from certain machines and then things that I'll only do from other machines. So if you have that ability, that's where actually, you know, using your phones for looking at emails is fantastic because, you know, the iPhones and the Androids are pretty well, more so the iPhones, down really well. And, you know, gives you a little bit of a sandbox to work in that you're not going to get yourself into too much trouble if you open something up that you shouldn't.
Did the fallout from the pandemic play any sort of role in this SolarWinds hack playing out the way it did?
I think the jury's still out on that one. I'm going to be very interested to see if they can forensically determine how SolarWinds was initially compromised, and if they do actually publicize that. You know, somebody falling for a phishing email or some other type of thing like that would not surprise me, but that's pure speculation on my point. So, you know, the number of phishing attacks have absolutely gone through the roof, you know, since the pandemic started, because people that typically would work together, would have to face-to-face interactions, are now all working remotely for the most part. So we're much more reliant on this technology, email in particular, and the attackers are wise to that and, you know, have increased their focus in that area accordingly.
What are the chances that most folks have been hacked or had their data somehow compromised and just don't know it yet?
Unfortunately, pretty high. I mean, when you look at some of the numbers, you know, and not necessarily with this compromise, but if you look at some of the numbers, whether it's the Equifax data breach of a number of years ago, Capital One, I mean, you know, you're talking hundreds of millions of people in some of those events. The potential of some of your information being out there is unfortunately high. Now the challenge then becomes is what information? Is it just your name and your email address? Is it, you know, other personally identifying information such as social security number, birthdays, and things like that? There's attacks that are happening every single day, and unfortunately, most of them don't ever make the media because they don't have to. So, you know, I think unfortunately, it's realistic that most of us have had our personal identifying information exposed in one compromise or another at some point.
Does the response to something like SolarWinds, does the response to attacks in general, does it need to be federal, would you say? What could the leaders of a state like Connecticut do?
So I think that this highlights one of the challenges of the internet, you know, which is everything is distributed. So, you know, what impacts residents of the state of Connecticut could be something that originates in California or Canada or Kazakhstan. So, you know, I do think that we need to look at something from the federal government level. What the specific answer is, I'm not sure, but there needs to be some type of overarching set of regulations around this to mandate cybersecurity throughout our organizations. Right now, we have a patchwork of different regulations in different states. You know, you look to some of our borders, both Massachusetts and New York have cybersecurity requirements built into their data privacy laws. You see it in other states out in the West Coast, you know, but here in Connecticut, you know, we have data breach notifications, but no specific requirements for organizations. The only people that fall under requirements are either people that are in protected industries that fall under compliance, you know, think healthcare with HIPAA or some of the financial industries, or organizations that have voluntarily gone through things such as a SOC 2 audit, which AdNet has done over the years to get a third party attestation, you know, of our security posture.
Final question. What's your nightmare scenario from a cybersecurity perspective? Something that hasn't happened on a large scale as of yet, but you think to yourself, boy, it's just a matter of time.
That's a tough question, because, you know, as a cybersecurity person, I have a lot of negative thoughts and negative concerns. I think to me, it's going after, you know, the critical infrastructure, you know, which is considered electrical, gas, water, and things like that. You know, you think about an attack and you think about something that's potentially destructive as opposed to something that's, you know, more espionage related. You know, to me, that's probably one of the biggest concerns that I would see from a cybersecurity standpoint.
You know, and it's interesting. I mean, in that Nashville this past weekend, or, you know, Christmas Day, that attack, the guy who blew himself up in his RV, boy, that took down internet service for miles around.
It took down internet service. Yeah, it took down internet service as well as cell phone service for a decent chunk of Tennessee, as well as three other states, I believe. So, I mean, and that was, you know, potentially an individual with an RV. So, you know, you think about what a determined cyber attacker that wanted to do some real harm to our economy. It becomes a nightmare scenario very, very quickly.
And even, I mean, we're used to seeing in war movies, you know, the bomb squadron goes in and says, okay, take out the bridges. You could see the bomb squadron now. First thing they say is take out the cell towers. Let's go take those out first.
Cell towers, for as much as we're all reliant on cellular technology, those AT&T style buildings that every major city has at least one or two of, are very, very critical to keeping everything connected. You know, you look at that, you look at substations. There's a lot of things to protect. And the good news is that, you know, Department of Homeland Security has spent a lot of time and a lot of money, you know, focusing on that area for the last, you know, better part of the decade at this point. But again, as I was, you know, saying with a colleague today, you know, those of us that are kind of protecting the world have to get it right 100% of the time. Those that wish to do us harm only have to get it right once. So, you know, that's unfortunately the world we live in as we all get more and more connected and become incredibly reliant on this technology. You know, it creates some vulnerabilities that, you know, if impacted can have a pretty large impact on all of our lives.
Oh boy, on that happy note. AdNet Technology cybersecurity expert Tim Weber, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, John.